Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Stephen the Warman Writes Kickfighting Podcast Show. I'm your host, Stephen the Warman. You are listening to this podcast in one of two ways. Either you are listening to my blog, which is lordgaul.podbean.com. I try to upload something to it once a week. This particular week, I had to wait every two just because there were a lot of cards and a lot of things came in, and last week there was a lot of news, of course, with the thing with Conor McGregor, and I was like, man, do I really want to post when all this MMA news is going on as his fight card's falling apart, and it didn't seem like a good time in which people would be focused on listening to a podcast. So I was like, I'll go ahead and wait till things clear out and come back, so forgive me. That's the only reason why I waited 2 weeks this time. And then also, you are listening to this podcast in the most efficient way is by going through the iTunes search engine, and the show pops right up. So I'm going to go ahead and start off with the Glory Kickboxing card that took place on the 31st of March, and I'll go ahead and give you guys, a lot of you guys know that I work as a matchmaker for, you know, Glory Kickboxing, and I help a lot with, you know, the U.S. talent and, help with fighters' medicals and just all the different roles that I play, different hats that I wear for the company. So when they're in the U.S., those are the responsibilities that I have. So when I break down a Glory card, I'm going to talk to you about the action and what was executed and what's next. But you're never going to hear me be super critical of any athlete. There are other podcasts out there for that. But my goal is just to tell you what I saw and what I think can happen for each athlete down the road. What you guys didn't see, Jose Palacios gets a victory over Sabin Kesesam. These are fights that are going to be up on the Glory Kickboxing site. If you go to the YouTube page, all these fights are up. So I just want to mention Jose Palacios gets that victory over Sabin Kesesam. Good effort by Sam. Palacios, very, very tricky style, switches stance, did a lot of good things. Sabin Kesesam did a really good job when he got his offense going and throwing in power. Just wasn't able to get the nod there. Split decision, could have won either way. Jose Palacios gets the victory. Garrick Atrias gets victory over Natalie Morgan. It was unanimous, 130-27, the other 29-28. But I will say this, man, Natalie Morgan really did a good job of pressuring heavy. Like, she realized that Jericho was the better athlete, and she would be able to score move. So she just gave up on, you know, trying to get clean offense and just focus on just pressure, offense, volume. And then she was really, really strong in the clinch. Jerick Trias, of course, showed a lot of skills, very fast twitch. Her left hook was really good. Her movement was really good. She was trying to find the right spinning shot. It just didn't land for her in this one. But she did show a lot of skill, a lot of movement, and, yeah, athleticism. So hopefully we'll see, you know, those ladies down the road again. Just stay in the gym and the opportunities will come. Arthur Estrazulas and Chris Bonilla, Arbedilla, I believe it's pronounced Bonilla, though. Chris loses by strikes in the third. First of all, big thank you to Arthur Estrazulas and Chris Bonilla. This fight was literally put together like a week and a half before. I had lost a fight, and then they said, hey, we've got the budget to put one more on. So I was like, okay, well, let me try to find, you know, some locals who have got good style. Arthur has a really good style for kickboxing in his MMA game. Chris Bonilla, he was undefeated in kickboxing. He's 5-3 as an MMA fighter. He really came out and threw heat. When he threw punches, he threw them really, really strong. So as he develops his kickboxing game, you know, that will be something to add on to something he's already doing well with the kickboxing, with the power that he throws with his hands. Arthur Estrazulas, he did a really good job of the consistent low kick game, the movement. He had a sneaky jumping knee. That's kind of what got the end started. He did a jumping knee towards the end of the third round that scored well, and then he followed up with punches, and the ref called it. Considering it was his first professional kickboxing bout, something that as we move forward in Glory, you're probably going to see a lot less of. I'm going to use that undercard for prospects that I think can be something down the road. But these two gentlemen, on very short notice, stepped up and filled this spot. So I definitely wanted to spend the time to say thank you to both Arthur Estrazulas and Chris Bonilla, because I didn't have the fight. I didn't have it. So a week and a half for both guys to agree to it. And, you know, cardio wasn't really an issue for either guy. They brought a really good show, and I appreciate it. We move on to the last fight, Jermaine Soto against Alex Higley. Split decision, 30-27, 28-29 was the one card for Higley, and the other three were 29-28 for Jermaine Soto. Jermaine Soto boxing was really, really clean. Higley was at his best when he was, you know, using his size and kind of walking towards Soto and finding offense when he, you know, didn't let the game be about space, when he used his strength. Whereas Soto had really good boxing, best boxing I think I've seen from him in a fight. And I thought that is, whenever he does this, you know, his Taekwondo techniques and the movement on them, they don't come off as clean scores as much as his boxing does. So if he can find a way to get those to score consistently, he's got something. But congratulations to Jermaine Soto on getting the victory over Higley there. So we move on to the main card that you did see, and we get Charles Rodriguez versus Brian Bruns. Again, another shout out and appreciation. This fight was on my undercard originally, and then, you know, due to injuries and visa issues, they were moved into the front, to the first fight card on the card. Charles Rodriguez did a really good job of, he's got real sneaky offense. Like, his combo to low kick flow really focuses more on the kick than the hands part. The hands are more the distraction, and he finds a big low kick. Also, he was trying to adjust to go from full rules Muay Thai to kickboxing, because there were spots where he said he wanted a clinch, but it wasn't there. Brian Bruns, he threw his offense okay, but it looks like as he moves forward, I know he wants to sit on his shots a little bit more. He had stoppages in his fights before his Glory debut. So I just think maybe the light, the experience, the movement of Charles, he wasn't able to get the offense that he quite wanted. But I do appreciate both gentlemen for coming in there, putting on a good fight. 30-27 on all cards for Charles Rodriguez. Very, very slick and savvy. Brian Bruns, of course, he'll just, you know, back to the gym. Keep fighting as much as possible when the pro opportunities open up. And then we'll see what we get from you down the road. And then, of course, Charles Rodriguez, someone I definitely hope to use again on another Glory card before the year is out. He showed me a lot of skill. Zachariah Zoghari goes against Bailey Sugden, 30-26 in all cards. The down scored was very, very questionable. Bailey Sugden did hop right back up, but it was close enough where I can make an argument for Zachariah Zoghari getting that score. As always, what you expect, these guys were very skilled. Bailey Sugden's boxing's really good. Zachariah was down to banging out with him. That's really, really important. For the action purpose of the fight. But then, of course, Zachariah, he loves his jumping, spinning techniques. And he was really cool to hang out with both of them, to talk to both of their managers, both of their coaches. And it was a great fight, very entertaining for me sitting there ringside. I think that the skill level and their ability to exchange and their ability to look for the kicks were a lot less in this one, I think, because both guys had such, you know, good timing with their boxing. But this is a really entertaining fight for me, and I enjoyed. Shout out to Zachariah, who gets the victory. Clearly, he won't be able to fight for the title next because he's coming off the loss, the stoppage loss in December. But this is the kind of win that he had to have. And Bailey Sugden's 20 years old. So just go ahead and throw him in a contender tournament or use him when they go to, I believe we're going to, Glory's going to London on the 2nd, I think. We're going to England on the 2nd of June. It's kind of the date that we're working at. So I would love it if Sugden got on that. He's a very, very good fighter. So good stuff for both guys. ZZ, Zachariah Zoghari gets the victory. The next card, next fight on the card, Troy Jones from Minnesota goes against Paul Panasiak. Panasiak making his second fight in Glory. And you know what you're going to get from Paul. Paul is steady. He's going to look for offense from both stands. He's going to throw his boxing, look to get his kick scores. Troy Jones really did a good job of playing with a southpaw stance where he'd play with a low kick and then he'd switch stance and, you know, go back to his boxing, and then he'd go to his regular stance and then land a low kick, come up with some hands, go back to the low kick and another stance. I thought that he did a good job of switching that up. I'd say one of my favorite techniques that he does is he will stand orthodox, score the outside low kick, and then go into a combo flurry and score the same kick in the southpaw stance, and then do the same thing in reverse. It's just a little technique that he played with here and there throughout the fight. Started to really find the timing of his right hand when Benaziak was kicking. And so that really helped him get separation on the cards. Had a moment where it looked like he scored on Banasiak really well. But Banasiak is super tough. This is the kind of fight that I love for Glory to have. A good U.S. prospect against a good U.S. prospect. Two guys who I think can put up serviceable opposition against international competition with the right grooming. Not saying that they're going to be world beaters. Not, they could or they couldn't. Like the opportunity will be there. But I think that if you look at some of the guys who I have, like Brian Brunson Rodriguez, probably need a little bit more seasoning before they're in that position, whereas Troy Jones and Banasiak both have that international experience because of the being on the U.S. Muay Thai team. They got to see what that opposition looked like. So I'm definitely going to use both on cards again. Good stuff by both guys. Troy Jones gets the big win. Nissa Mexen gets a victory over Ashley Nichols, 29-28, three times, and 30-27 on the other two. Let me tell you something. Watching this live, it was really, really great fighting by Ashley Nichols. Like, she realized early that she couldn't handle Nissa Mexen's movement. And Nissa Mexen, best female fighter in the world, one of the greats of all time. I've said that many times on this show before. But she gets into her boxing and movement, her kicks and movement, and it was like Ashley Nichols had her mind made up that she couldn't play that game. So her corner did a good job of yelling and making sure that she played with the same combo flurries, didn't let up on them. You know, you'd hear, if you guys probably heard it on TV, but the coach would usually yell, jab, jab, two, and she'd throw it. And if they couldn't get the reach, he'd add the hook. He'd go jab, jab, two, three, and then flurry. Like you hear them yelling it out. It was real, real obvious for me sitting ringside. I don't know if you guys heard it on TV, but Ashley did a great job of just realizing, I can't catch this girl. It's time to just fight. And I think that's what you want when you get a high-level opportunity like that. Anissa Mexen, of course, up to the task. Anissa struggled in the clinch with Nichols, but when she gets into her boxing and she gets into her kickboxing, she is something else. Anissa Mexen is a special, special talent, very good movement, very good punches. We all know she's the boxing champ in France, just done two fights. As long as she wants to fight, she'll be good at fighting. So I'm excited to see Anissa Mexen every time she competes. Very good job by both ladies. Next time we see Mexen, of course, will be on the next Glory card in France, where she defends her title against Anil Devli. We move on to Pavel Zverev. He gets a 30-27 decision over Myron Dennis. This was one of my favorite fights of the card. I've had Myron Dennis in the gym before. He was determined to prove that he could compete on a high level with international opposition. And everybody talked about, I remember when they did the weigh-ins, they said, this guy is the heaviest underdog on the card. You know, like that was kind of how they saw it, how they saw the fight. And he was just so confident in his ability to compete and do well against this opposition. He came out there, took the center, was able to score a lot of offensive strikes right away. He did a really good job of playing with his boxing, kicking sporadically. The power of Zverev was so, you know, obvious to the crowd, because when he threw a shot, he was trying to maim someone. Big offensive shots were coming in and scoring well. When he got them, he couldn't get him in a flurry, though, because Dennis did a good job of getting the earmuffs up and not taking too much to the head. He took some shots to the body, but he's a really big 209er. He's probably, Myron Dennis might be the biggest guy at 209 pounds in all of Glory kickboxing. The next day, he had put on 20 pounds after weighing 209, whereas Zverev weighed 215, after, the weigh-in. So he just kind of stayed close to his walk-around weight just because how they get down in a lot of the parts of the world. That weight cut's an American thing. So I thought that Dennis showed well. But I really thought the power of Zverev and the opportunities he had ripping to the body, and then the single low kicks when he got him, that showed up well in round one. Round two, I actually thought, went to Dennis. I thought that he really got into his boxing flow, really got into, if they got close, he would push, score a knee and push away. I thought his kickboxing was really good. There's a period of time where he was feeling it, dropped his hands against, people were saying, hey, how are you going to play that game with Zverev if dropping your hands and giving those opportunities, you guys might get knocked out. But Dennis was so confident in his defense and his ability to score. He would dance and then throw offense and drop his hands and then throw offense. I thought he scored well in round two, but at the end of round two, there were a couple moments where Zverevlov got the big shots. Like, he couldn't find the big ones upstairs. He ripped the body real heavy, and then when he attacked the back leg, it landed with such a powerful pop. Like, it's almost like after what I would say wasn't his best round, but in the last 25 seconds, he landed some of his best techniques, and I think that's what gave him that round. The last round was all Zverevlov. You saw Dennis start to slow. Now, again, he cuts a lot of weight. Maybe that comes into play. But you saw him start to slow, and you saw Zverevlov start to pick it up and look for that power shot. But Dennis was all game. He wasn't going anywhere. Zverevlov, I mean, one of the best fighters in the world. You could see it whenever he threw offense. You could see it whenever the low kick scored. And I told him when I saw him out there, I was like, man, this is my – it's hard. It's so crazy that the first time I saw you fight was when I was at the K1 Fans Forum. And some video emerged of Pavel Zverevlov. And back then, he used to wear Muay Thai, like the way MMA fighters wear their shorts, the longer shorts. One of the first guys I see to transition from Muay Thai kickboxing shorts to that style of short in a fight, he was one of the first guys. Like, I mean, I'd seen it before, but he was one of the first guys who that was all I was used to seeing him in. And he had some Fairtex, and I just saw, like, three videos of his, and I just kept looking for more. And to go from there to him, you know, the main event, got the victory over Gokhan Saki, and then he main evented against Murad Buzidi, and a really, really big crowd, really big arena. It was a lot of fun to watch his career throughout these years. He's a lot more hair now. But Super Combat to Glory, he's done a great job with his career. This was a nice win for him. Afterwards, he looked a little frustrated, like he wanted the KO stoppage, but he's still a great fighter. He's going to, you know, fight for the title one day. He's the interim champion, but he'll fight for the big title one day. A lot of fun to watch. Excited to have him in kickboxing, as always. We move to the main card, where Josh Johnsey gets a victory over Stoyan Kaprivolinsky. I've said that name I said it right all week. I didn't say it wrong to him one time. And here I get on the podcast, and I mess up Kaprivolinsky. So he's Stoyan for the rest of the show. So Stoyan, I thought, did a good job of being real aggressive in the first minute, really throwing the switch kick heavy. You know, he threw it to the body, threw it to the head. He kept Johnsey backing up. Johnsey would look for his boxing here and there. And then towards the end of the round, maybe I'd say about halfway through, maybe with 1 minute to go, I felt like Johnsey got into his flow, got into his combination of low kick game. He has a strong combo to low kick game. When he throws it, he's throwing it for real. Like, there are no soft exchanges or soft throws, you know, shots thrown. He is trying to score big. And if the low kick doesn't score, the punches were still strong. You know, like, he's not joking. They're not distractions. So I mentioned before, as Charles Rodriguez grows, because he's used to getting the clinch when he gets close, he sits on those shots a little bit more. He might have just something to improve on. He's a young fighter. Sits on those shots a little bit more. Big offense might come from him more down the road. Johnsey fights like that right now. Groomed and prepared to sit on his power combos into the low kick game. I thought that you could make the argument that he won round one. I thought that he did. And then round two was the round, or excuse me, early in round one was the kind of confusion that, or the kind of, I could see how the judges could be swayed by it a little bit, because I did think Stoyan came out with some good kicks, you know, to the body. Round two, all Josh Johnsey. Really got into his combination kickboxing flow, and I've said it in the show many times, when Josh Johnsey is on form, he is what kickboxing is all about. Like, the flow of his step knees, his combos into his low kicks, his counter game. He is high-level, must-see TV when he is on form. In round two, you saw that. You saw him score well. You could see Stoyan drop the glove to, you know, defend from the low kick, which means that it was really having an effect. Round two, big for Josh Johnsey. Then Stoyan, you know, Mike Pastaneer set him down. You got to go for it, son. That kind of moment, you know. And, of course, guys wondering where that's from, that is from Diego Corrales versus Castillo, where after he puts the mouthpiece back in his mouth, after he'd gone down for a second time, no coaching needed, he says, you gotta go get it done now, son. Like, just, he's not supposed to be coaching, but that's what was said in the corner. I don't know what Mike said to Stoyan, but it seemed like something like that, because he went out there, He, you know, walked Jauncey down. Jauncey wasn't able to get the space that he had. He abandoned the low kicks and started to box a little bit more. And Stoyan just kept throwing. Whether he scored or not, he just kept throwing, We go to the judges' cards, 29-28 for Jauncey, 28-29 for two times for Stoyan, and then the last 30-27 or for Josh Jauncey. It was there were some close moments in the fight. I definitely, you know, like that I had Jauncey winning personally, but man, Stoyan really showed me a lot. And Josh Jauncey, you know, I told him this afterwards, as far as having the tools, he has the tools to be the best fighter in the world. Like, he has the skill set, he has the athleticism, just got to keep fighting. And, you know, it's tougher, and his era, there's a really tough guy at the top, that comes into play too. You get the right era, you could be the best guy. He has a really, really tough matchup in Sitichai if it comes down the road, or if they want to do Robin Van Roosmalen in Sitichai. Him and Robin at 155 would be fun. Anything that they do with Josh Jauncey is a win, as long as he's active. If they give him a gap, or if there's times where he's not fighting, that's when we're not doing what we need to be doing. We got to have this kid fight all the time. He's really, really good. Mike LeMaire gets a victory over Chris Camozzi. 30-27 on all cards. Mike LeMaire, big-time star in L.A., man. I'm telling you, the crowd was everything he did was a big deal. Every time he scored a straight right, every time he scored a body kick. And, of course, one of the big things that he's good at is Mike LeMaire will score offense and then go into the clinch and keep you from getting offense back. Very sneaky stuff, some Remy Bonjasky-esque stuff. So, but he really did a good job with the counter right, really good job with the body kicks. Chris Camozzi, he had a little bit tougher cut than normal, but he, you know, came out, executed offense, you know, was throwing his left hand, felt really, really strong. He had a moment where he dropped his hands and he let LeMaire throw. Unfortunately, when that happened, LeMaire was going up on the scorecard. So Chris, big, strong, probably one of the biggest, strongest guys in the weight class. Just this particular fight just didn't have the volume that he had in his first glory outing. So, you know, back to the drawing board there. You know, clearly we're going to use him again. You know, he's got a, you know, three, four fights, something like that with Glory. I can't remember off the top of my head. So he'll get other opportunities. Just this one didn't go his way. Mike LeMaire, he talked to me about hopefully fighting in France one day because, you know, French is his first language. There are a lot of matchups that I can definitely use him, you know, or put him in, as he is, you know, just a Glory regular, a guy who I expect to compete on, you know, a lot of cards in the U.S., and hopefully he'll continue to grow as a fighter and just kind of needs that breakthrough international bout. Once you get that one, it kind of opens a lot of doors. So good stuff there. Simon Marcus gets a victory over Zach Wells. Simon Marcus, big, strong, was able to walk Zach Wells down and then throw power once he got Zach on the ropes, and he was able to get the stoppage early into the fight. Zach Wells came out scoring and moving, playing the distance game. Just when the, you know, Marcus was able to finally corner him, he's able to let offense go. Now, first of all, I need to say big thank you to Zach Wells. He was not supposed to fight Simon Marcus. 2 weeks before, he had a different opponent, and that opponent had injured themselves, and then we had moved the card around to accommodate to get people on TV. So a lot of people on this card, the original opponent they had, because of injuries, because of, you know, passports, things got moved around. And in this situation, he, you know, raised his hands and, you know, for the Simon Marcus situation, said that he would do it, talked to his coach Dwayne Ludwig. They said they'd give it a shot. Didn't go their way this time. And of course I'm gonna use Zach Wells again, because he, you know, went out there and went for it. You know, some people even asked about it, you know, like, why would you do that particular matchup? Wells hasn't even fought in a while. Marcus is one of the better fighters in the world. For a couple reasons. Number one, I want to keep Marcus active, man. I want to keep my best fighters fighting. I don't want them to take big gaps and only wait to fight the same few people. And the other thing is, once upon a time, in kickboxing, you'll have in our history, a guy who is an up-and-comer will go against a world champion. And they may not always win, but and a lot of times they'll get stopped. And people say, man, that was too much of a step, and so on. But they want to see where they are. And this isn't like their career's over. We're going to keep using them. So the examples that I'll use right now, I've brought up before. I always use Paul Briggs versus Jamad. Paul Briggs was doing his thing in Australia, fighting extremely well, goes to Japan, fights the weight class, the champion of the weight class there, beats them, and then he goes to Thailand to see if he could do it again against their champion of the weight class, and he goes against Jamad, and he gets stopped by low kicks. He finds out it's another level, and afterwards he says, hey, I beat the champion in Japan, so I went to Thailand to see if I could beat the champion here to see where I stood up. I was ready for the guy from Japan. I was not ready for the guy from Thailand. He was better. You could say he should have never been in that fight, but he needed to know. Stefan Leko, when he first went against Badahari, he beat him in a 1 minute with a spinning back kick to the liver, and Badahari went down. And they had all that talk. There's all that trash talk, and he's real animated. I think he likes spit on him or something like that. But after the fight, Stefan had calmed down, and he said, hey, he's 20 years old. He needed to feel what it was like to go against someone world-class. When I was 20, I went against Ernesto Hoost. For me, in the history of kickboxing, it's not like the history of boxing. It's not like, even the history of MMA. In our history, once you start to have success, world championships are easy in kickboxing because every promotion has a form of world champion. The thing that's difficult for us is beating elite guys, and that can only happen when you try. You can't go against a lot of guys that aren't elite and then go against someone elite and expect to win all the time. Badahari didn't win that first one, but he won the second one on the bigger stage with one of the most violent KOs you're ever going to see. So sometimes it starts with giving someone that shot. So clearly, Wells, back to the drawing board, hasn't fought in a while. I'll go ahead and look for something and get him back in there. I've got no problem. Somebody's like, man, you shouldn't have done that. I hate that fight, that kind of deal, whatever. But literally, this was a situation where someone raised their hands and said they'll do it. And I gave the opportunity, and I'll give more opportunities. Shout out to Zach Wells for that. As for Simon Marcus, he's the man. Put him back in that title hunt right away. Any of those fights are good. He was originally going to go against Safar Wellness, I believe. And we could do that fight. That'd be third time those guys go at it. Yusri Bulgari, definitely want to see that one. Thomas is still out there. Robert Thomas, anything that they do as far as keeping Simon Marcus active is a win. So good stuff there. We finish with the title fight where Robin Van Roosmalen defends his title 48-47 on one card, 49-46 on the other. Kevin Van Arstrand came out, a very good athlete despite being a little bit older. Had been working with Floyd Mayweather Sr. He was in the house tonight. He, had ringside seats, and he went in the back and helped Mitz for him. He kind of does Mitz with his hands a lot if you've ever been around Floyd Mayweather Sr. I had the wonderful opportunity to learn from him 6 years ago. I went to his gym, and he wasn't at the Mayweather gym at this time. He was at another gym in Vegas. And great time learning and growing for him and growing from him. And he kind of fixes everything. He fixed everything when I was working with him. And he gave me a ride back to the MGM where I was staying both times. So I'm all about Floyd Mayweather Sr. So it was cool to see him out there helping Kevin Van Arstrand. Kevin had his regular hat, but it had TMT on it. And he goes out and does his thing in round one, scoring and moving. Robin Van Roosmalen, you know what you're going to get from him. He's going to bite down the mouthpiece, walk you down, rip the body, throw power hooks to get you to slow down, and then go into a flurry. He has really well-placed kicks. If he gets an orthodox guy, the kicks are even more consistent. If he gets a southpaw, he'll still bang the body and then find his low kick to the inside or outside leg. He's all monster. Robin Van Roosmalen is strong for the weight class, and he walks you down. Kevin Van Amstrand, after round one, was definitely up. I don't think that there's one person in the building that didn't have him win round one. But you could see, and the end of it, that Robin had started to find some success. And then from rounds 2 through 5, that success was really, really dominant. Robin really picked it up, scored well. I think he scored a down in the 4th round. Just a powerful guy, really, really strong, believes in what's going to happen when he hits you. And that's something I've mentioned on this podcast before, but I'll bring it up. There is something to believing in what your hands are going to do when you score. I've had other people say, I've got KO pop. It's way different than thinking that you can hurt someone, or even if you score a big KO, that you have KO pop. That's one part of it. But the other part is knowing what happens when you hit people. That really is a much stronger understanding than if I throw my hardest, the other guy will be gone. What I'm talking about right now is what makes Robin Van Roosmalen type special is he is so strong when he walks forward and he rips through the body, that he is fully confident that when you get to rounds 3, 4, 5, you are going to be slowed down by what he's done earlier, and he's going to be able to get the shot that gets you out of there. Not everybody believes in their offense like that. So usually people who score and move, they play that way because they feel confident that they can score and get away, but they don't feel confident that they can score and keep you, as they say with Mike Tyson. When Mike Tyson was coming up, they say when he hits people, they stay hit. I think that people who play a touch-and-go type game, they know that they can score and get out of there, and that's their savviness. That's how they score offense. But they don't necessarily believe in what their punch and power can do in the way that Robin believes in what happens when he hits people. So he did a good job in this one. Kevin still had moments, and Kevin is super tough. His toughness is the reason why he didn't get stopped, because a lot of offense was scored on him in that fourth round, and in the fifth round, he took a bad shot to the body. He even made a, audible groan that the whole arena heard, but he just battled out of it, started to get his movement on, and, definitely shame on the crowd in L.A. They were booing when he started moving because they wanted to see him get stopped. But screw that. Kevin Van Arsdorp's all heart. He was not going to give up. He was not going to stop. And he goes the distance, and he feels it. He feels what the championship level is like now, and he's like, okay, now that I got that victory, on to the next battle, on to the next guy. Go ahead, get some wins, so the next time I'm in that fight opportunity, I get my hand raised. That is what this game is. It is about the next fight after the fight you just have. It's not just another story has to be written here. So even for Robin, who's the champion, now the story is who's going to compete for the title next. And there's some good options out there. So definitely good stuff by Van Arsdorp in defeat. But Robin van Roosmalen proved to be the best in the world for glory. Still some good international. I mean, he's in a tough spot because some of the better fighters in his weight class are not in the glory company. So Masaaki Nori, not in glory. Abdullah Azbiri is in glory. So that'd be the one that I would want to make next. Azbiri wins in France. He's the guy who I'd put in there next. So he's a good option. Let me see. Lee and, who am I forgetting? I know I'm forgetting someone from China. I'm just having a mental lapse right now. But anyways, there are other options out there for him to show his skill set, and hopefully those opportunities will come, and maybe those guys get signed to glory down the road and just show just how tough this guy is, because Robin van Roosmalen is not only a super tough guy, but he is so much about the sport and so much about, getting better and improving. And he said that he was thinking about going to MMA full-time, and then he saw what MMA was paying full-time, and he was like, maybe I'm going to hang out kickboxing a little bit longer. So definitely, props to him for putting on that performance, and we will move on. So we're going to go ahead and go to Kunlun Fight, and it's got one of my first nominees for Fight of the Year is on this card. I absolutely love this fight. I'll get into it a little bit later, but let's go ahead and start with some of the results. So this is in their big 170 kg or 154 pounds tournament, and there were a lot of fights on this card. I am not going to talk about all of them. I am going to talk about a lot of them, though. I'll at least give a mention to the winners. I may not break their fight down, but I'll give a mention. There was a lot of good things on this card, but for sure, the one thing that I got from this Kunlun, this bracket of the Kunlun tournament, is I got a Fight of the Year candidate from two guys who I expect nothing less from. So let's go ahead and start going down the card. Ruzan Zhatova, Fazarali. Excuse me, I did not have that last name because that was I just added this. I wasn't going to talk about this card, but Fazarali gets a victory over Zhang Jinhu, 30-29 two cards, 30-28 in the other. And then we have, believe this was, is this a reserve fight? No, I can't see there. But Yila Yassi gets a victory over Kanesin Yakusoi. And then I have Kong Ling Feng gets a victory over Boim Hamend by split decision. Those are fights that I saw, but, in the tournament, but they weren't fights that kind of stood. Kong Ling Feng, I've seen him fight a few times. I think he's serviceable. Not championship level, but I think he's solid. Those are fights that I wanted to mention But they lead into the fight that I really want to focus on, and that's Onatoli Moiseev, as he gets a 29-26 victory on five cards over Nordin Ben Mo. This is one of the best fights of the year so far. It is my number one fight of the year. We start off with Onatoli Moiseev. He comes out and gets into his kickboxing, but Nordin Ben Mo ain't having it. He walks him down, strong punches in the pocket, rips to the body real heavy. You could see it right away. The first one that he hit Anatoly with, you could see it hurt. He backs him up, scores a big one to the body. Moiseev goes down. So it's the first round. We're looking, everything's looking good for Nordin Ben Mo. Onatoli Moiseev gets up. They get into exchange. They move around. He does a spinning hook kick. Nordin Ben Mo goes down, and it landed clean. Big time score there. Onatoli Moiseev's back into this game. They go, start competing again, and another one scores. So he's got two kicks to the head that gets it down. So all of a sudden, in a round that looks like it was going to go 10-8 against him, he now has two knockdowns to one knockdown in it. So by far, another candidate for round of the year and probably the leading contender so far. We get into round two, and Onatoli Moiseev starts to have success with the hands, scores another down over Nordin Ben Mo. But Ben Mo, he's never going to stop. He gets up even after taking that shot to the head, and he battles right back. We go to round three. Nordin Ben Mo is all over Onatoli Moiseev. He has walked him down. He's throwing big shots to the body, big shots upstairs. You see the kickboxing skill, but he ran out of time. It makes you wonder what would happen if this was a five-round fight. But you can make that argument for Onatoli Moiseev. You know, what would have happened if he had more time? He could have conserved himself and looked to try to build on that the offense that he scored in round one in a different way. But the battle back of Nordin Ben Mo, who started off this fight with a knockdown and looking like everything was going his way, to looking like he was going to get knocked out after going down, you know, three, four times in the next two rounds, and then the third round to be fighting as if he was the guy who was winning the whole time and trying to get a stoppage. Nordin Ben Mo is the truth. So awesome stuff there. Onatoli Moiseev moves on in the tournament. Other fight that we had was Onatoli Moiseev gets a much easier fight in the next round as he stops Kong Ling Fang. As I mentioned before, Kong's serviceable, but he isn't the level of what you're going to see from Onatoli Moiseev. Moiseev stops him in round one, and he moves on as the winner of that portion of the bracket. He's going to be tough to beat in that tournament. Also, shout out to Kixi. He does a good job of breaking down the tournament in full. So if you guys want to know what the full breakdown of the tournament, because sometimes it's hard to follow Kunlun, definitely find Kixi. He follows me on Twitter, so just K-I-K-S-I-E, if I remember correctly. He's got a tournament bracket. Definitely look at that. Liverkick.com, they've been posting it regularly. So those are the ones to follow. Those are the ones to watch, okay? So we'll go ahead and move on. We get both Fofana gets victory over Pavel Turok. There was an MMA fight, and then we got Jay Aokwe gets a victory over Zhang Shuju. And then very important here, because I had wondered about this, Nicholas Larson, he gets a victory over Napakao Suriluk, KO. He got a jumping switch knee. It's a pretty good KO. It's pretty solid stuff. Definitely want to see more from Larson, but him being in this tournament in general, because this is a fight that we were trying to make in glory, it's cool that Nicholas is fighting and competing. He's able to get the stoppage. Tan Xian gets a victory over David Calvo. If I remember correctly, I predicted that one. I have to go back to my notes, but I think that was one of the upsets that I predicted. If so, you know, pat myself on the back. I'm super smart. But he gets a TKO in the first round, Tan Xian. And then Nicholas Larson, the better fighter in that portion of the tournament, as he gets a victory over Tian Xian. Good stuff there by Larson. Also want to mention Dennis Purek gets a victory over Jay Debo by decision. Dennis Purek's the guy who's been fighting. He's fought in Japan. He's fought in Thailand. He's fought in China for quite some time. He gets a victory. And Jam Thong gets a victory over DNS. Zwave. I'll go ahead and say Zionist Wave with a silent D. But Jam Thong gets the victory there, bouncing back from some stoppages that he had the year before. So really good stuff in that card. I thought that particular weekend was one of the most entertaining kickboxing weekends. Grateful for it. did some really, I mean, had some really, really good action in it, and I'm excited to see more down the road. We go to Bellator Kickboxing. That's right. I'm just going to keep flowing into these results for you guys because there was so much kickboxing going on in the last couple weeks. Really, we're at a prime season for us. I got a little bit of a break this weekend, but then I'm right back to it. We'll go ahead and start breaking down the card. What you guys didn't see on the air was Najib Adali gets a victory over Adam Pokorny by decision. Salvatore, I believe it's pronounced Cicerone, gets a victory over Antoine Haybush. And then we have Enrico Carrera gets a stoppage victory over Giroffi. And then I have what would be our television portion of the card for me. Drina Bears comes out and looks absolutely sensational against Athena Esmorfady. Esmorfady is, I thought she was tough and game, and this is she took this fight on 2 weeks' notice, but Bars was super sharp. The boxing was sharp. Her combination low kick game was sharp. Her step knees were sharp. She just got into her offense so early and so powerful, and she's there to be hit. So if you throw, you might be able to score against Urena. If she's got her mind made up, she's going to exchange. The best way to catch her, of course, is when she's bailing. But she did not fight well against Anka Van Gestel. Like, she won, but it wasn't the clean performance that she wanted. She's definitely sharper than that, and she said it. So she was determined to come out here and show how clean a fighter she can be, and she showed it. Like, she looked fantastic. It's just her timing on the step knees, much stronger in the clinch. That's something that grew. When she fought full rules Muay Thai, even if you look at the Cyborg fight, she did not look like she had the confidence in her kickboxing, in her clinch. She'd just get thrown to the ground in those spots. But here, she looked really strong. So as far as performance goes, it has been a while since I've seen so many clean, effective techniques score so strongly throughout. Like, it just, I really felt like Urena was just on point the whole time when she was throwing offense. Big time victory for her, and still your Bellator champion, Urena Bears. We move on to what some people thought was an upset. Jalwin Parr's got the bigger name, but as far as skill goes, Eder Lopez, or Lopes, I thought that he was a guy that would give some good opposition. Like, I could see him hitting the pads. I was like, hey, probably the best athlete that Parr's gone against in a while. Parr had his moments and floors where he'd throw a good combo floor and he'd finish with a knee, but the significant shots that were coming for Eder Lopez, I'm telling you, when he threw a low kick, like, he was spinning John Wayne around. Like, he was throwing them. John Wayne looked visibly bothered by them. Lopes threw combos and spots. And anytime John Wayne Parr did a switch kick with his left leg, every single time Lopes low kicked the leg. As soon as the leg hit him, he followed that leg to the ground and he scored it. So I call it a kick following. That's just kind of how I did. Or sometimes you'll hear the term counter kicking. You'll hear me use that term. But if someone does a switch kick and your right low kick is loaded up, you just follow that leg to its landing point and you put a low kick on it. So I call that following the kick, or I'll call it kick countering. I thought he did a good job of that. When they went to the scorecards, and I wasn't sure what they were going to be because I kept myself from the results. When they gave it to unanimous decision for Lopes, I thought that he'd won. And John Wayne was, he's upset, and he's still had some really good moments with his combo flurries. He did have some good step-up knees in there, but the consistency and the power that happened when Lopes put the kicks on him, the effect that they looked like they had, and then his boxing and spots, I could definitely see why this went to Eder Lopes, and I had no problem with the decision. But John Wayne definitely, being in there, he feels differently about it. Thought that he did enough to win two of the rounds at least. And afterwards, he said that he thought that he was, robbed in the fight, but other opportunities will come. And this is Bellator Kickboxing. They can remake that fight again, no problem. He can get his revenge in a rematch. But shout out to Lopes for getting that victory. John Wayne, of course, is still the man in kickboxing and Muay Thai. Anytime he's fighting, the whole kickboxing community will love him. Sabre Sengol gets a victory over Renata Rakowski. It's a split decision, and here's the interesting thing. I thought this fight was all Sengol. She is a reality TV star. She won kind of what would be like, I can't remember what they said. I think they said like Big Brother the version of Big Brother in Turkey or something like that. Very, very athletic. She was able to score in spots. Whenever they had exchanges, she did well. And I thought that this fight was going to be an easy decision for her. And then the strangest thing happened as Rakuzi, who never stopped throwing offense, who never gave up no matter what it was, the flow of the fight felt like, all of a sudden, she threw something in a flurry, and Sengul looked visibly hurt, and she stopped and walked away. It looked really, really similar to what happened when Gregorian walked away from Myrtle. It was that kind of a movement. So she just stopped. And then Rakuzi did a good job of, you know, following with flurry because she's looking to score down. And then Sengul's able to get into the clinch, buy herself some time. And she came back at the end of the round, but it was almost like she pressed pause, like she was trying to say time out. And they weren't having it. Because, and I don't blame them. I do think that that's dangerous. There is a protect yourself at all times. And usually you'll hear me say the only time you hear that is when something bad happens. Something dirty happens, that's when you hear the term protect yourself at all times. You'll either hear it before a fight starts or you'll hear it, you know, after something dirty happens. This, to me, was completely clean. She looked bothered by something and she walked away as if she could just call time, like it was sparring at her gym. And Rakuzi did a good job of running right after and trying to get the stoppage, especially because she knew she was down a couple of rounds. Sengul ended up coming back towards the end of the round, but the last round definitely went to Rakuzi, and the first two went to Sengul. But there was a split, as one judge did have it 28-29 for Rakuzi. But the right girl won. She fights in the same division as Denise Akilholtz. They could do the fight with Denise right now. They could do it right now. No question about it. They could put that one together. They don't have another fight for her. She was a somewhat draw. There was a decent crowd pop for her. Go ahead and make that fight now. Okay. The co-main event is Alexa Ignashov. He gets a victory over Zevit Podorok. I will always love Alexa Ignashov. Go ahead and just hate me forever. I'm never going to not like that guy. He is amazing. He is a guy who did a lot of things to keep himself from having the success in kickboxing that he probably should have had. People talking about his drinking and his womanizing. And, you know, in Vegas, I know a story about where, you know, he was gambling, you know, the whole night before he was going to fight in the Glory Tournament the next day. I am never going to not like that guy. Like, he is a guy who I'm always going to push. I thought he looked in really good shape, considering he's 40 years old now. I thought Zevit Podorok is the perfect opponent to have in front of him. I thought Podorok had some moments where he landed some pretty good low kicks. But the story of this fight was the body kicking of Alexa Ignashov. Kept a strong defense, as always. It's hard to knock Ignashov. I think I can count on my hands how many times he's been knocked down or hit hard. You know, Barty Hari and Freddie Camayo, and he came back and avenged the Freddie Camayo fight. So it's like he has really, really got the tools to win even at this level. So when I saw his name, I was like, all right. And I saw the opponent, I said, all right, that works for me too. I thought that the body kicks were good. Round three in particular, you look like he was having fun out there. Sometimes he could play a little bit too like a tie where he'll like bounce on the front foot, keep a high guard. Play body kicks and kick counters. This time the kick was so strong and he mixed it up by putting it to the head, putting it to the arm, putting it to the body. And you could see that it was visibly hurting, slowing, and moving Podorok. Round three in particular, I thought that Ignashov really got into his offense. They gave Podorok one of the rounds, you know, because of his low kick work. I think round one, Ignashov didn't get going enough. But two and three, I thought were pretty solid for Ignashov. It still came back split, 29-28, 29-28 the other way. And then three-judge system. 29-28 for two judges, 28-29 for the other. Anything they do with Ignashov is good. They should match him the way they match Yan Wayne Parr. They just got to find the right body. That's what this really comes down to, finding the right person. So good stuff by by Glory here as far as their matchmaking. Good stuff by Alexa Ignashov, who, like Yan Wayne, these guys need to be in these kind of fights as they go down the twilight of their career. Good stuff, Ignashov. We wrap this card up with Raymond Daniels getting a victory over Jibril Aoi. Aoi, I thought, has got really long length, super long arms. He's like 6 feet tall, and I think his arms were like 80, 3.5 inches, which was really good for it's really long. But I thought that for 2-3 rounds, he just watched, followed Daniels around, and Daniels did his thing. Got into his boxing, got into his side kicks. He did the kicking early, got into the boxing later, and I think that's been one of the most improved things about his game. You know, he had more fun in the walkout than the fight. The fight got a little grimy because it didn't give us the clean KO that we were looking for, and sometimes that can happen with Raymond Daniels fights. If he doesn't get that super cool, exciting KO in round 2 and round 3, it can get to the kind of a repeat of what you saw before. But because his boxing got so much sharper in round 4, it really, really impressed me. You know, and he scored it down with the boxing in that round. And then to Io's credit, in round 5, I thought he went for it. I thought he stopped waiting. I thought he threw him way more offense. And to me, I really give him a lot of credit for the offense that he attempted to get going, at least in the 5th round. But they didn't even give him that round. 50-44 and 50-43, Raymond Daniels in a sweep. I mean, they just got to find opposition for him, like guys who make sense, and they're out there. They should probably go to China and see who they have, you know, at 77 kgs, see if they'll come over and go against Daniels, because that's the only thing missing from him. He needs opposition that we care about. When he beats the guy, people need to say, oh, he beat that guy. That's something that he'll, you know, that's the next step for Bellator. They got to get opposition that we know so we can get behind the athlete. I'll go ahead and run off a few. I'll go back to China as we had the Wenling Fang. Let me see. I have, let's give you some of the results. Adrian Maxim defeats Wang Pengfei by extra round decision. Adrian Maxim, I've mentioned him in the show before, solid fighter. Wang Pengfei, pretty good himself. Yao Zhao gets a victory over Alex Buble. Didn't see that one. Decision win for Zhao. Wang Kong gets a victory over Morian Montanari. Didn't see that one either, but shout out to Wang, big victory. Norden van Roosmalen, I actually did see this one. Gets a victory over, I think I saw that one. Please forgive that this, after all the fights that I watched, you guys hear me going down this card. Some of them I just don't remember as clearly as other, but as others. But Norden van Roosmalen gets a decision victory over Zhu Zhangguang. And then we had Wang Ziwei gets a victory over Sergei Kabazis. And then Meng Qinghao, who's actually very talented in the fights that I've seen, gets a victory over Antonio Gomez. And then I wrap the card up with Jin Ying gets a victory over ex-Glory fighter Arthur Sorcerer, who is based out of Thailand now. Jin Yang, solid. A victory over Sorcerer moves you in the right direction. Nothing really, really stand out. But I really like the Meng Qinghao, who fought in Glory before, so kind of biased there. He's very, very talented. I like Meng. I want to see more of him down the road. And then also Wang Kong is talented. And the more I get from female kickboxers kind of emerging, the better it is. And Wang Kong, not to the level of Wang Qinghao, but still someone to pay attention to for sure. I will go ahead and give you guys one more fight card breakdown. I mean, I'll give you two more. Why not? Whatever. I'll go ahead and give you two more. This is a results-based show. It's really my focus. I'm going to go ahead and take you to MTGP, the Muay Thai Grand Prix, which, of course, is connected to the Lion Fight. They had a card at the O2. I actually been at this area of the O2. It's like a inside of the big O2. There's like a room where it's almost like a theater house. And I watched Iman Barlow go against Alexis Rufus there. It was a real fun card. It's where I got to see, Ernesto Hoos was there coaching. It was a pretty good card top to bottom. I'll go ahead and go through some of the results. I won't go through the whole card. But yeah, definitely, you know, whatever, I'll go through the whole card. I'll go ahead and start bottom up. Ruth Ashdown gets a victory over Eva Schultz. Ruth Ashdown is a longtime veteran in the kickboxing scene in England, kickboxing, full rules Muay Thai. She's the true definition of veteran, gone over to Thailand before, had big wins, fought for many organizations, pretty much every organization that they've had in England. She's fought for them at some period of time. Ruth Ashdown gets a victory. Nicola Kea gets a victory over Gracie Spicer. Grace was, you know, one period of time, really showed a lot of skill. Not that that's gone, but Nicola Kea, on the move, always about new stars. No matter their age, a new star is someone that just you're not used to hearing on a regular basis. I've seen Kea fight before. Good victory here for Nicola Kea over Grace Spicer. George Jervis gets a victory over Libisi Gale. Mikhail Kolungo gets a victory over Shane O'Neill. And then Joe Ridicek gets a victory over Hakim Hamech. Unanimous decision there. Eddie Sadel gets a victory over Joshua Aragon by the unanimous decision. Michael Pham gets a victory over Walid, I believe it's pronounced Dejanet, unanimous decision. And then a couple of the bigger fights, Dan Edwards gets a victory over Adrian Guerlante by unanimous decision. That was for the MTGP World Light Heavyweight title, which they do at 80 kgs. Dan Edwards, someone to watch. I think that when he, if he ever wants to fight, you know, kickboxing, I think he should consider 77. I'm not sure if ballooning up to 87 is to his benefit. He's got a weird body frame. I think he could do either. But Dan Edwards, big time victory there. Charlie Peters, it's weird because they're trying to set up a, you know, a big fight, you know, between him and Liam. Samopech Fairtex stops Charlie Peters with the elbow. Brutal stuff. You'll probably see that KO on my KO of the year. Fairtex is tough. But Charlie Peters, he'll be fine. He dared to be great in this one. Really went out there and fought a tough guy and didn't go his way. But Peters will be right back in the picture. This fight was for the World Welterweight title, which they do at 66.7 kgs. So hopefully we'll see more from Peters down the road. And Samopech, I don't want this to be a situation where you win the title and we never see you again. If he's the title holder, bring him out to defend his title. Marley Zonneberg gets a victory over James Benal by unanimous decision, and that was for the super middleweight title, 76.4 kgs. So I'm assuming if Edwards wants to move down, that's where he would fight. Good stuff by Marley. I didn't see all of that fight. Some of this stuff emerged online. Some of it I saw on Facebook. It's a good card. They've been consistent with their shows. And, I mean, we'll be fine, you know. Marley Zwanenberg, I think, really is a real standout for me when I look at the card. And then, of course, Charlie Peters, even in defeat, I still think that he's one of the better kickboxers and Muay Thai fighters in England. So I think we'll still see more from him down the road. So after all that, I will finally get us to one more card. We're going to go ahead and go to the Duel 3 card, which took place in Paris, France. And it had one of the better fighters in the world on it, and Chinggis Alazov. But before I get to Alazov's dominant victory, I'll go ahead and go to the undercard, or the early portion. Full Rules Muay Thai, Neo Tita gets a victory over Madeline Soflin. Knockout in the first round. Mohamed Aleon gets a victory over Esaba by decision. And then we had Full Rules Muay Thai, Celestine Mendez gets a victory over Alverdi Ramazanov. And then we had Cyril Benzoquin gets a victory over Wendy Anayanal. Gets a draw, 100% my fault. I was thrown off because I've been saying victory all this time. But it was a draw with Wendy Anayanal. So then we go into the card of people that you guys are probably a little bit more familiar with. Gaetan Dambo gets a stoppage in the second round over Sinsumut Sork. Kim Mi, Gaetan, I'll spell that out for you, G-A-E-T-A-N, Dambo, D-A-M-B-O, someone to watch, not super on the radar and compared to some of the other French fighters that we've spoken of, but I really do think he's very talented, and hopefully the next few years the opportunity to emerge will step up. Bobo Sacco gets a victory over Rafi Bohic. This is a big one. Bobo is, he fights everybody. I mean, he's fought Fabio Pinca, he's fought, you know, internationally, Miguel Licha, just a tough guy who's always down to bang it out, you know, long body, he's got a strange kind of rhythm to his Muay Thai. This was his big swing of his career. Rafi Bohic, of course, still has success in the stadium, so for Rafi to go from the stadiums to go back to France and then lose to soccer just shows how strong French Muay Thai is. And that Sako is still a player and not to be forgotten. And, of course, I'll wrap the card up with Chingiz Alzov as he gets a victory over Claudio Badiole. Scored a down early in the fight and then a combination and a big-time knee on the ropes for a very, very mean stoppage for Chingiz Alzov. Moving forward, Chingiz can fight anybody. It's cool that I once heard that he was like locked into a contract and he was an exclusive contract. Since he was locked into that exclusive contract, I swear he's fought for K1, he's fought for France. He's just going to be a prize fighter. Shout out to him. I'm really excited to see anything that they do with Chingiz Alzov's money. But the idea that he's going to go against Giorgio Petrosian in Italy, that's just awesome. Hopefully, I'm not going to lie, as a fan, I want a changing of the guard. I want him to beat Petrosian. But beating Petrosian in Italy, as hard as it is to do normal, almost want to put impossible on it in Italy. So, great stuff. Thank you all for listening to my show. God bless, and I'll be back with another one next week. Peace.